Turl led him down near the zoo cages. There was no fire burning. It was too late. There was no bundle in front of the cage. The spring chill of the exterior revived Char a trifle, and he returned to being nasty.
"Animals," he said. "You're a animal lover, Turl. I never did like you, Turl."
Turl was not listening to him. What was that down by the morgue? He peered more closely. There were animals down there.
"You're awful clever, Turl, but you're not clever enough to fool me."
Turl took a couple of steps toward the morgue, trying to see in the dark. He took out a pocket torch and flashed it in that direction. Brown hide? Hard to see. Then he got a better view of it. A small herd of buffalo. They'd been drifting north for days now, mixed in with some horses. He turned the torch off. The casually walking hoofs were distant tiny thuds. Louder were the squeaks and crunches of the new spring grass being pulled up as the herd grazed its way along. An owl was hooting off somewhere. Usual nonsense of this accursed planet. He gave his attention back to Char. Turl put his arm around Char's shoulder and guided him back to a point where the circles of the compound domes made a recess as they met. It was very dark here, hidden from all views.
"What didn't fool you, friend Char?"
asked Turl. The owl hooted again. Turl looked around. There were no vantage points from which they could be seen. Char was sneering.
"The blast cap smoke," he said, putting his face mask very close to Turl's.
He reeled and Turl held him up.
"What about it?" said Turl.
"Why, that wasn't no blast gun that went off an old numph's office. That was a blasting cap. You think an old mine boss like me can't smell the difference between a blast gun and a blast cap?"
Turl's paw was reaching for the small of his own back, under the jacket. He'd been trying to work out a way to furnish a reason for launching the gas drone day after tomorrow. He suddenly had it, and without stirring up any psychic powers either.
"A point in care, that miserable excuse, just hours before?" "Oh," exclaimed the hostile Char. "You are clever enough for some people, but I see through you, Turl. I see through you."
"Why, what did you think?" said Turl.
"Think? I didn't have time to think. When I get home, I can tell them a thing or two."
"You ain't so smart, Turl. Think I don't know one smoke from another? And people will agree with me when I get home."
Turl shoved 10 inches of stainless steel knife into Char's heart. It was the knife Johnny had given Chrissy. He lowered the sagging body to the ground. He took a nearby scrap of discarded tarpaulin and covered it. Turl went back to the cage and looked in. The girls were sleeping. The buffalo herd was still moving quietly past the morgue. Turl went back inside. There was more to do tonight, but just now the party must not realize he had been absent. He joined the cyclos who were chanting. They were very drunk. Down at the morgue, men moved carefully so as not to disturb the buffalo they had drifted in on the place from the plain. The horses were unloaded and gone. Nobody had observed the murder of Char. It was not possible to get that close to the domes without being seen. Those in the morgue continued their work, unaware that a new factor had been entered into planning, one they did not know about and had not predicted. The farewell party continued to racket noise out of the compound, unaware that their guest of honor was missing. 2. Johnny lay in a coffin at the near end of the morgue. The lid was slightly propped open to give him air and an interior view. On the outside roof, a button camera brought the exterior scene to a hand viewer resting beside him in the dark confines. He was dressed in chinko blue, but he wore moccasins, the better to speed him today. For today, in the space of just 2 exact minutes, he had to cover certain exact grounds and do very drilled and exact things, and do them in an exact time, or the whole project would fail, and he would be dead. And Chrissy and Patty would die as well, and all the Scots and others left on Earth. He heard the transshipment area control tower warning horn for the incoming phase.
Motors off, stand clear!
The humming came on. The ground vibrated. The coffin lid trembled. The humming built up and up. Suddenly, 200 new incoming cyclos appeared on the platform along with their baggage. The humming dropped. A faint vibration remained.
Coordinates holding and linked up with second stage.
The whole area came to life. 1 hour and 13 minutes would elapse now until they fired back to Cyclo. Personnel department members were herding the incoming draft off to the side and getting them in line. Turl eyed the assemblage. The last time a draft had come in, he had had a bad shock, and now he wasn't taking any chances. He was half expecting to find a new planet head in this lot, somebody to replace Care, and he might have to think fast. He walked down the line, not looking at baggage for contraband. He was just looking at faces through their domed transport helmets, checking off the names. 200. More of old Numph's nonsense to get as many on the swindle payroll as he could. Turl went down the whole line. He breathed a sigh of relief. No replacement here for Care. Just the usual gutter sweepings from the slums of Cyclo, plus an oddball junior executive and a couple of graduates from the mine school. Routine. Not one in the lot that could qualify as a planet head. All a bit lethargic. No agents from IBI either. Turl raised a paw to personnel and they divided some off for waiting transport planes destined for other mine sites, and some to berthing here. They loaded them on flatbeds with their baggage and they were gone. That was a relief to Turl. He approached the morgue. That blasted horse of the animals that was always hanging around the compound was grazing in back of the morgue.
"Get away from here!"
Turl yelled at the horse, and made paw motions to shoo him off. The horse looked at Turl indifferently, and when Turl went to open the door, it came even closer. Turl unlocked the morgue door and threw it wide. There were 10 coffins lying there, ready to be scooped up by lift machines. He checked for the small X marks on the covers. Nothing like taking precautions. Every lid had its little X mark. He patted one of them fondly. He took a deep breath. Maybe 8 or 10 months from now, he would be digging these up some dark Cyclo night in the isolated and dreary cemetery on Cyclo. And it would be riches, power. The fruits of his project were hard won. They wouldn't be that hard to spend. The first lift came, thrust its prongs under a coffin. Turl went back outside. He checked off the name on his records. The second coffin, the third, the fourth. Turl looked at the fourth one, a bit puzzled. How come he had spelled J.Ed's false name wrong? Not Snit, S-N-I-T, but Stni, S-T-N-I. He checked for the X. That was there, all right. Well, to crap with it. He'd enter the error on the record. One good false name deserved another. The X-agent was good and dead. That's all that mattered. The lifts were dumping the coffins any which way on the platform. Turl watched, a bit apprehensive at the rough handling. But none landed upside down. 9 of the coffins were lying out there now. The lift superintendent stopped his machine beside Turl to let him check off number 10, the last one he was carrying.
"These coffins seem awful heavy," commented the superintendent.
Turl looked up, masking any alarm. They were only about 100 pounds overweight, not enough to notice and certainly not enough to make much difference to a lift machine. The coffins should weigh about 1,700 each, even with those lids.
"Your power cartridge is probably half discharged," said Turl.
"Maybe,"
said the superintendent. The coffin seemed like 3,000 pounds, but he rolled the machine and dumped the 10th one on the platform. The personnel department flatbed for outgoing personnel came up. Its driver was looking a little harassed. There were 5 cyclos and their baggage on the truck, 2 of them returning executives and the other 3 ordinary miners going home. The driver gave Turl the list.
"You'll have to change that list," said the driver. "Char is supposed to be on it. He was scheduled to go home today, and all of us and personnel have been running around looking for him, and we can't find him. His baggage is here, but we can't find Char."
"Which is his baggage?" asked Turl.
The driver pointed to a separate pile, and Turl swept it off the truck with 1 sweep of his arm.
"We looked everywhere," said the driver. "Shouldn't we hold up the firing?"
"You know we can't do that," said Turl quickly. "Did you look in the beds of the female admin people?"
The driver let out a guffaw.
"I guess we should have done that. That was some party last night."
"We'll fire him off in 6 months, said Turl,
and wrote, "Fires later," on the document after Char's name and signed it. The personnel flatbed went off to dump the passengers on the platform. They stood about in a group, making sure their firing helmets were on tight. They were several feet away from the coffins. Turl glanced at his watch, 1 hour and 11 minutes. 2 more minutes to go.
"Coordinates holding on second stage," came from the bullhorn over the operations dome.
The white light was flashing. Turl walked back closer to the morgue. That blasted horse was poking around the door. Turl made shooing motions with his paws. The horse moved off a few steps and began to graze again. It was a relief to see those coffins out there. Turl stood gazing upon them fondly. About 1 minute to go. Then his hair seemed to stand on end. From within the morgue, the empty, deserted morgue, came a voice.